This is Colourful.
What about the new cross commemorations then? Later on this afternoon at 2 o'clock, hundreds of people are going to gather at number 439 New Cross Road for this special commemoration of that fire which took 13 lives initially, then a 14th a year and a half later. Let's talk to Sandra Ruddock. Sandra, what are your thoughts and feelings on this particular day?
Well, at the moment, very sad, and watching all the things that I've been through over the weekend, it's sort of like brought everything back to that first morning when the fire first happened. I mean, it's not a day in my life that I don't think about it. Yeah,
and when you think about it, I mean, what do you feel? How does it make you feel?
Sad, angry, to think that all of those people that perished in that fire, including my husband and my sister-in-law, that there's been no body found or any reason why they died.
And there's been so much said, written, discussed. There have been inquests, there have been investigations, there have been a lot of accusations and counter-accusations as well. How has that affected you during all that time?
Well, badly in respect, because at the time when my husband died, I was pregnant. I was 5 months pregnant when he died, and he died on my 22nd birthday. So not only was I pregnant, but it was my birthday. And my daughter is a living reminder for me. She's a spitting image of her dad. And I've had to try to tell her like what happened to her dad when she was younger and growing up, and like, why haven't I got a dad, and where is my dad? And it was hard, very hard.
I can't imagine how hard it is. Even now, it's just it's hurting me to hear what you've, you know, had to go through. I mean, over the years, there's been many inquests. The original inquests returned open verdicts. There was a new investigation in 1997, a new inquest ordered in 2002, again recorded an open verdict 2 years later. And I understand there's been quite a lot of division between the members of the families of the victims in terms of what genuinely did happen. Nobody really knows. It seems to me, looking at some of the evidence and documents today, that the consensus is that it probably wasn't a racist attack, and some people speculate that it started from within the house. I don't know what your personal opinion is, or if you want to share that with us, what you think actually happened that night.
I do believe that. I mean, when the first inquest happened, I was heavily pregnant. I missed the last 2 days summing up because I went into labour and had my baby. And most of the first inquest sort of went over my head. I was there, but I wasn't there. Lots of things are around me that went on that I just didn't take in. So it was really till really later that I really got involved in it and learnt lots of things. There were things that I didn't even know from the beginning. And then listening to various people's talk and listening to what they wrote on paper learned lots more in the second inquest than I knew. But lots of us do believe now that it was it did happen from within the party, and we believe it was an accident that went wrong. I think someone was just trying to stop the party or to get someone else's attention, and it went wrong.
I think one of the biggest problems is that, regardless of whether it was a racist attack or not, it was the indifference that people felt they got from the police. There was just no sense that the investigation was being handled correctly, no sense of sympathy from the rest of the country, be it from the Prime Minister at the time or the Queen, despite the fact that there was a similar incident that happened in Ireland where 6 children died. And yet there was a lot of public sympathy for that, which you could argue is a different country even.
Yes, I don't understand why. We all felt it. We as parents sent sympathy to the people who lost their children in Ireland, and when we didn't get any sympathy back, we thought, you know, like, what the hell's going on? Why didn't anybody say, I feel for you, how sorry was you? I mean, like, who's going to tell my daughter? I mean, she's in her 30s now, but who's going to tell my daughter, you know, like, well, we was really sorry for you and we was there for you? Because there wasn't anyone there for her. There was no one there for me.
And I'm just thinking about what it did to the community, because on a national scale, we're all aware, and people during the events to commemorate this over the last few days have been talking about how it galvanised the community nationally, how we saw uprisings in Brixton, in Manchester, in Leeds, in Bristol, you know, the summer of discontent in 81. But I'm just wondering about the local community. I believe you still live in South East London. You're in Peckham, aren't you?
Yes, I do. Yes, I am.
And what did it do to the community locally?
It devastated them. It devastated them. It devastated them to the point of thought that they wanted to ask questions. Why did no one care? Why did no one do anything? Why wasn't there anything? And even today when you talk to people and they go, oh, yes, I remember that, they never found anybody for that, did they?
Mm.
Why?
And what will it mean to you to see that blue plaque, the Nubian Jack Community Trust plaque, go up at number 439 New Cross Road later on this afternoon, 2 o'clock? I believe you'll be there, won't you?
I will, Tom. Yes. What will it mean to me? Will it be a constant reminder for those people that walk past that house to remember that tragedy that was there and to remember that there's still no answer to why 13, 14 people died in that fire and in that house? It will be a constant reminder to people that are walking, because there's somebody out there that's walking around that knows.
This is Colourful.
And Alex Pascal, legendary broadcaster and activist. And now I think Alex about to enter his eighth decade, but still as active as ever. He's on the line. Alex, good morning to you.
Not too bad. How are you doing?
Very well indeed. Good to hear from you. First of all, tell us about what's taking place at the Albany tomorrow and the role you'll be playing in that.
Well, my role would be just because during the period and when it happened, it was then when I was doing Black Londoners. I mean, so then I followed and covered the entire thing from the morning when we picked up the news. I was on the road from then to interview the Mrs. Ruddock, where the house where it happened. And there was nothing as a funeral that I was not at. I mean, I was at 12 of the funerals. The daily affairs, waking up to news like that, was not something nice at all. Arriving at Mrs. Phoenix's house to interview Mrs. Ruddock, and the tenseness that was in the atmosphere, and everybody depended on what had to come from Black Londoners.
That's right. That's the program that you presented, and it was on the old Radio London, wasn't it?
Yeah, as a matter of fact, it became the international station that threw out the news as it went, you know. You could imagine the race tension of the period, because racism was at a pitch at that period, the youth and the police and everything else. So when this was heard, everybody said, so, and it still believed it was a firebomb. And the denials, Mrs. Thatcher was then the Prime Minister, she never responded, and the black community went outraged. There was something which happened in Ireland, she responded to it.
That's right.
And I think
that
the Queen responded to that one, didn't she?
Yes, they both responded and totally ignored the black community. I mean, come on, this was not something that was nice at all. I mean, I've seen the torching of animals in sugarcane plantations, but it was like that.
Wow. I mean, yeah. People will be shocked to hear the way you've described this, but 30 years ago, I mean, this country, in many respects, was a very different place now. People need to remember what actually happened. I mean, 13 young people died on the night during that birthday party in
the
house.
The 30 didn't go on the night. A couple died after.
Right, sorry,
but,
yes.
So on. But this country at that period, it was the black youth was under siege morning, noon, and night by the police. And if one followed from the march, if ever you wanted to see something where children was jumping out of schools, and it brought the elder parents and the children together, because before, you know, Caribbean parents in particular, we were just saying to children, if you were behaving properly, the police wouldn't be after you. Mm-hmm. It was not that way at all. Children were just, black children were on the siege all the time.
I'm just looking at one of the slogans that was massive at the time, 13 dead and nothing said. But also, Dame Jill Knight was somebody that was spoken about, a right-wing member of the ruling Conservative Party at the time. A speech she gave was widely interpreted as condoning or even encouraging direct action against noisy parties. So there was a slogan called Dame Jill Knight, set the fire alight. Do you remember that?
There are a lot of things. Nothing is more painful than to listen to Mrs. Ruddock that morning when she said, I got up, I was shouting, I didn't know what was happening. There was a white man standing on the other side and he wouldn't even lend me a hand. I was begging, I went to hospital, they discharged me, and it was somebody who took out the shoes from her feet and gave it to me. This country was, it was the flint that set everything which happened afterwards, you know, in the April period. There was no tragedy and nothing as bad as what happened at New Cross on that night.
People say still to this day it was a firebomb. Others say, well, it was just somebody who was at the party, then left and then came back and torched it. People said to the police, you haven't investigated it properly. Is this a racist attack? And because it happened on us, you know, you don't really care.
My role, Henry, from the moment I heard that, the role I took on was to raise money. Mm-hmm. To assist the family. And I remember getting Radio London, the Rotary Club of St. Marylebone that I belonged to, and people just lent themselves into me to raise money, because we raised what the local radio linked up across the country. Never happened before. Mm-hmm. We raised £21,000. People were collecting little change anywhere and just sending it to me. Prisoners, there's one guy who collected 160 something pounds in the prison, and this cash was just coming. People trusted people like myself at that period. I mean, it wasn't nice. It wasn't nice at all. It wasn't. It's something, as I said to a few people before, you know, a lot of people say, Alex, would you like to talk to us about it? I don't, because I had to follow it all the time.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
The graveyard, high commissions were part of it. Nobody that was black did not descend on this whole thing. It was the worst treatment we ever got as the black people in this country.
The initial inquest returned an open verdict, and there was a second inquest, I believe, in 2002. And that too returned an open inquest. How are the families today? Are they still, you know, really, really angry about this? And are they, there's a notion that it's becoming increasingly accepted that it wasn't arson and that actually it was an accident. Now, I don't know if that is true when it comes to the families and friends, or if this is just something that, you know, the police put out.
I have not been in recent contact with the families, but I could tell you one thing. It tore the families apart.
Mm.
Individually and collectively, it tore them apart. It's only last week I was saying to somebody, but what has become of Miss Ruddock? And they said to me, I said, think she died. I still don't know.
Mm.
I mean, I remember going to call in all the steel bands in London. And all the big steel bands at the Commonwealth Institute, we had a whole jam session for people to raise money. My thing, just saying, what can I do for their relatives? I remember Bishop Wood. I've never seen people so vexed. And on the march, Lord have mercy, when, before the march left in front of the house, Commander Smith was the police in charge. I remember one of the fathers, and the police only wanted to arrest people all the time. But once the march begun and heading down the street, it was like a river with estuaries, and tributaries, feeding in, feeding out. And it ended in Cavendish Square. Well, that was something else. The police was then frustrated. The horses was out, and they surrounded us. And they were trying to arrest a little boy. And it's the first time I've ever heard human voices in fury, orchestrated in fury. Anything could have happened there. It was the nearest I saw to death coming.
This is Colourful.
And I'm glad to say we have on the line Darcus Howe. You were the person that galvanised people for this march, the Black People's March that happened in 1981. And we're just wondering how you managed to do that and what happened on the day itself.
On the Tuesday following the tragedy at New Cross Road, where the kids died, were burnt to death, it was a Holocaust. Young people and some parents gathered at the Moonshot Youth Club, and we called it and kept there until the march, every Tuesday until the march on the 2nd of March. There's a lot of grief, a lot of pain, but the two things that assembly achieved, the first thing is a close monitoring of what the police were doing, what the allegations they were making. And the second thing, to organize the march, that from the floor came a suggestion that we have a demonstration, and the demonstration was targeted for the 2nd of March, and it was unanimous. Every single person there, there used to be about between 400 and 500 every Tuesday, and vigilant about the issue. And they appointed me unanimously as organizer of the march.
And Darcus,
editor of Race Today, a magazine that's published monthly. And there were two sets of funds. You could choose which one you contribute to. The first one, obviously, were the funerals of the children who died. That assembly and the outer reaches that it was able to mobilize buried every single child. That is, young people, old people, black and white. All the money came in to Mr. Alex Pascal and the late John LaRose. The second one was the organizing committee of the march. They sent that money to Race Today. I edited the journal then. And I left immediately, beginning at Liverpool and ending at Luton, mobilizing people. I used an old American tactic from the civil rights movement. We call it one in five. I met one person, and each person had to find another person, and so on and so on and so on, and multiplied it down the line. So, coach, I came Liverpool first, Preston second, Bradford, Leeds, Birmingham, there's Manchester, Nottingham, Luton, and at Luton, I was asked to return back to London because there was a series of requests for me to speak, so I came back to London. By the time that mobilization was finished, it was clear to me and the committee that there was a huge response all over the country.
And on the day, Darcus, on March the 2nd, and what was the main message to Parliament, to the British people, to the establishment, from all those people who turned up desperate to say something?
The major slogan that came spontaneously out of the march was 13 dead and nothing said. You have to understand what the issues immediately were. One, there was a huge fire in Ireland, and Mrs. Thatcher that killed a lot of people. Mrs. Thatcher was the Prime Minister. She wrote to Ireland, she said nothing to us. The Queen wrote to Ireland, said nothing to us. And we said 13 dead, and nothing said. There was an issue as to how the fire was caused. At first, they found a petrol bomb bottle with a wick under the sill of the building where the wick was burned down. Secondly, there was evidence from people who were at a bus stop that a white man in an Austin Princess pulled up and bombed the place. All of that was motivated, in our view, by a campaign being carried out at the time by John Knight, an MP for one of the Birmingham seats. And we attributed the attack on the house to that.
And this is the very, very, it was a very, very controversial issue, Darkus. And of course, the newspapers of the time were not very positive in their coverage of this major demonstration. I mean, the Sun newspaper said, "Day the blacks ran riot in London."
It was a very peaceful demonstration. As we came 70 miles, as we came through, people joined the march, coaches and coaches and coaches behind. We emptied an entire school. People, kids jumped over the fence as the march passed through Peckham to join it. People walked out of work to join it. So it was an immense mobilization. And you have to remember that it was the first time in the history of prisons here that we had a vast majority of youth as part of the black population. Before that, they were coming in slowly and stuff. And the march, we had stewards counting, had 15 cells, upwards of 15,000 people on a Tuesday morning.
Because okay.
In the debate, we said, one said week, a weekend, we should do it on a Saturday. And the general feeling was, after a short debate, that people have to take a day off work and school, sacrifice whatever, to come on the march. It was historically moving, and it began a concerted movement of black people in this country. It launched it. No committee organized itself, named itself an organization, and went along with the leaflets and stuff. This was a movement that spontaneously arose from below. Therein lies its authenticity, and therein lies the influence on the future attitudes of young blacks.
I've got to say, Darkus, when you're recalling this, I've got goosebumps. The hairs on my arms are standing up. And I'm wondering whether you think, I certainly can't remember it myself, if there has been any single issue, any single tragedy that has brought black people, African or African Caribbean, together in the same way since.
There hasn't been. And I had been an organizer. I worked in the South of America with the Student Nonviolent Coordinating Committee. I worked in Trinidad with the National Joint Action Committee. So I was, I had the experience and the skill. We put at the head of the march, we got a huge truck. When we reached Blackfriars Bridge, that's the first time that police kettling people started. They drew a line in front of the demonstration. They didn't want us to come over the bridge, Blackfriars, and into Fleet Street. They drew a line at the back of the demonstration. And I was on the truck. I told the driver to drive. I just said, drive. And the truck just went through
The police line.
Nobody got injured. And waves of people came over in Fleet Street with huge buildings on both sides. And we were coming through. 13 dead and nothing said. 13 dead and nothing said. The chief police officer who was doing the investigation and trying to turn it into a self-immolation of these kids. It was Stockwell is a liar. A bomb caused the fire. Stockwell is a liar. A bomb caused the fire. And the sound was bouncing off the buildings. And as we passed one of the newspapers, their journalists and so started to show this banana skins through the windows and make monkey noises. And that was the moment when a disturbance of the spirit.
This is Colorful.